Well, thank you. And I want to thank the organizing committee for inviting me to come out. I want to express what several other presenters have in the short time frame. Please look in the preceding book. It goes a lot more in depth from what I'm able to cover in the short 25 minutes up here. But what I've been asked to do is kind of cover some of the management factors, which you'll see a lot of things that have already been presented today, tied back into what comes in to be successful using these reproductive technologies. And the way I've kind of set this up is things we can do prior to the breeding season, at the breeding season, and then post-breeding. And to look at it, to start off with, what are the important things to look at to get cows ready going into some of these reproductive technologies? Well, to start off with heifers, one of the things to look at, as Cliff really did a good job pointing out, is where have things been in the past? If you know where you've been, you can kind of get an idea of what's going on. If you're one of those herds that are having very poor conception rates, adding some of these reproductive technologies to it is not going to be a fix-all. In fact, it may make things worse. The other thing is, as John Hall pointed out, growth promotants, we really recommend avoiding them. One thing is, some of them are labeled, some of them can be used without detriment. The problem is there's several of them that if we do get estrogen and progesterone exposure at the wrong time during uterine gland development, we can actually knock out glands and very much hurt conception rates. And so knowing those things and which ones can and can't be used can get just as complicated as some of the protocols can. So the standing rule of thumb is just don't use them. Appropriate target weights, John covered that very well. I'm one of them that leans more to 65%. And the reason for that is just like he pointed out, there is some forgiveness in it. Working with producers across the state of South Dakota, what is mature cow size? How do you know what your mature cows are? And so knowing those things, it's very important if you're going to calculate 55 or 65%. And then what percent of animals are pubertal? Well, one of those things is, as John very elegantly pointed out, is once we start getting down below 55%, we run into problems of animals getting bred early. The other interesting thing is when you look at it, there's a recent study out of U.S. Mark that looked at large numbers across multiple breeds that actually showed puberty was very consistently somewhere between 50 and 55% of mature weight. And so if you're on right on the knife's edge of 50 to 55%, it's very easy to slip off. The other thing with puberty, and we've seen reproductive tract scores presented several times today. This is a study, came out a couple of years ago, looking at reproductive tract scores in heifers. And what I want to emphasize here, we've seen this data in several presentations, tract score 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, AI conception rates, just what everybody else has shown. Breeding season pregnancy rates, very similar. Our animals that were pubertal prior to the breeding season had better breeding season pregnancy rates. And to go along with that, they calved earlier, they weaned more pounds of calf. What's interesting in this study, though, is they followed them to the next year. So of the animals that conceived, so even though you're down at 50% here that conceived, they got bred the first year. What did they do the second year? They still had lower AI conception rates. And so when you think about that, are these animals you want to keep? Going back to what Cliff was talking about, we select these animals that conceive early, breed early, and they stay in the herd longer. So then let's look at the cow side. We've got heifers developed correctly, good body condition. Now what do we do on the cow side? Again, where have your pregnancy rates been the past few years? Again, we want groups of animals that are close enough together that we can synchronize and breed them and get the benefits from them. What's interesting is the rest of these points, body condition at calving, current body condition of the cows, postpartum interval, linked to the current breeding season, and cyclicity, all deal with animal cycling. They are all factors that play with whether that animal has initiated normal estrus cycles prior to the breeding season. When we've looked at large numbers across heifers and cows both, one of the main factors that impacts success is cyclicity status. If heifers reach puberty prior to the breeding season, we get much better conception rates. In cows, same thing. If an animal's not cycling, she's not going to get bred. We can induce them with some of the estrus synchronization protocols, as Dr. Smith pointed out, but they have to be close to cyclicity for those to work. Typically, cows run 35 to 60 days anestrus intervals. Now, when we get into body condition scores, thin condition, things like that, they can run a lot longer. And so this delay in cyclicity can really affect conception rates through any of these reproductive technologies. The other one I want to spend just a little bit of time on is vaccination. And this goes across heifers and cows, either one. One is setting up a heifer to have a good immunity going into the breeding season. And so typically it's recommended, as was pointed out earlier, to vaccinate before and at weaning to get those initial vaccines in. The other one is both heifers and cows, if we're going to vaccinate, need to be done at least 30 days pre-breeding. If you read the labels on any of the vaccines, they all say greater than 30 days pre-breeding. The reason for this is if we do induce any inflammation, any fever, anything like that, it gives a chance to clear out. I've had the opportunity a few years ago to work with a study that actually looked at naive animals. And we do know that both IBR and BVD can get into the ovary. And we actually saw effects on conception rates greater than 30 days later. And there's some other studies reporting the same thing. And so if they're naive animals, we really want to be concerned. And if we do not know their vaccination history, we really want to avoid the modified lives. One of the things I can say about that, it was pointed out in an earlier presentation on using modified lives in pregnant animals. And working closely with our vet diagnostic lab on this, the rule of thumb we've been telling people is if you didn't give the injection, you don't know it was given. A prime example is we actually had a group in the state buy 300 pregnant cows a few years back, was told they had been vaccinated with a specific modified live pre-breeding. They've got the cows trucked in, followed the exact same, said, well, this is what they were given. They gave the exact same modified live at preg check. They aborted 100 of the 300. And the diagnostic lab, in isolating it, came up with that exact same virus. And so they know what it was. They went back to the producer they bought them from. And then it comes into, well, that's what I said I had done. And so if you aren't the one that gave the injection, it's very hard to know what was actually given. So if we get animals set up correctly, we have good animals in good condition, they're cycling, what do we do at the start of the breeding season? One of the things I've done a lot of work on is actually estrus detection. And we think of estrus detection as one of those things that tells us when to breed cows. We've seen several talks, several slides on that. And we know that that is important. We don't know that animal needs to be bred unless we see her in estrus. But there's lots of other things that go along with it that are very important to the success of a breeding season. There's lots of estrus detection aids out there, and I've seen probably everything possible used. Everything from paint to K-Mars, Estrotech patches, Gomer Bowls, Heat Watch have all successfully been used. They tell you what is going on when you can't be out there. Now, why is that important? If you ask my graduate students, they tell me I make them out there constantly. If it's bright enough to read an ear tag, we're probably out there heat detecting. Most people don't spend that much time out watching cows. The reason it is so critical is one thing that I haven't seen come up today is actually how we get pregnancy rates. And if we look at synchronization rate times conception rate, we get pregnancy rates. This study was done out at Colorado State several years ago, where they took a group of animals, synchronized them the exact same way, and detected estrus two different ways. The blue bar here shows intensive estrus detection, which at that time was the heat watch system. So a computerized estrus detection. So the cows are being monitored 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The red bar was casual heat detection, where they went out 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes in the evening. Over a five-day period, they had a 30% difference in what was detected in estrus. What's more interesting, though, is the conception rates. So the conception rates are the number of animals pregnant out of those that semen was put into. All of these animals were detected in estrus, and if we look, we still have a 20% difference in conception rates. So why would this be? They were seen in estrus. Everything should be correct, right? When we multiply across 71%, 35% pregnancy rates, all bred the same way, all managed the same way, totally off of multiplying synchronization times conception rates. So what drives this? Joe was talking about it earlier, graph from Dr. Sackey, the compromise. If you go out in the morning and you see a cow in estrus, when do you breed her? Tonight. When did she start to come into heat? If I went out this morning and she's not in estrus and I go out tonight and she's now standing, when should you breed her? You know, the rule of thumb is 12 hours, so if we see them in the morning, we breed them in the evening. If we see them in the evening, we breed them in the morning. But where do we fall in that curve? And not only that, without some of the estrus detection aids, as Dr. Smith pointed out, those animals that show estrus for less than 5 hours or less than 6 hours, do you even see them in estrus? And so the amount of time you can spend out there, the more detail, the more information you know on your animals, the better off your conception rates will be. One of the interesting things is when do animals show estrus? So up here there would be over 500 head under continuous observation. And if you look, 26% in the morning, about 18% middle of the day, 27% evening, 29% middle of the night. If you look at that, that's over 55% would be in nighttime hours. Well, being in South Dakota, in one of the northern states, in the summertime, we have no problem with this. I mean, we have daylight from 5 in the morning to 10 o'clock at night. But we're getting an awful lot of fall breeding herds that are breeding cows in October and November, where we have daylight from 9 in the morning to 4 in the evening. And so it makes it very difficult to spend the time out there to watch these. So what about fixed time AI? We don't have to worry about it, right? It doesn't matter if they show estrus or not. We've talked about, we give them that shot of GnRH, it will induce an LH surge and cause ovulation. Well, Dr. Smith actually showed the first three studies that started this analysis. One of my graduate students just finished this analysis. There's a little over 10,000 head in this study now. There's 26 different herds using everything from the co-sync, the 14-day seeder, the 5-day seeder, the 6-day seeder, and the 7-day seeder. So 5 different protocols. And if you look at that, those animals, using a meta-analysis across all studies, a 27% improvement in pregnancy rate among animals that showed estrus prior to AI, prior to fixed-time AI, compared to animals that did not show estrus. And this is breeding based on the protocol, depending on if it's 48, 66, 72, whatever the protocol was, they were bred by the correct fixed time AI protocol, and estrus was determined prior to fixed time AI. What's interesting is another study has recently pointed out animals that were selected for higher fertility actually had increased estrus activity. And so there are some correlations that go along there. In these higher fertile animals, we do have higher estrus activity. So we get animals in estrus. Now go into a little bit that Joe had talked about on inseminator efficiency. When we see an animal in estrus and we put semen in the correct location, we get fertilization about 95% of the time. What is the correct location? Right here in the uterine body. The reason for that is, as Joe was talking about, we put semen in the uterine body and it will flow up both horns just fine. When you start trying to go into the uterine horns, you risk the chance of scraping the endometrium, and you can actually get an immune reaction if you get blood into the uterus, since sperm is actually a foreign body to the female. And Joe had put this data up, so I won't spend much time on it. We know there's about a 10% decrease when it's put into the cervix, so getting through the cervix is extremely important. And we know it occurs about 20% of the time. So we get these animals set up correctly. We get them bred correctly, so we get them in estrus, whether it's a fixed time AI or estrus detection, so they still need the estrus expression as a sign that shows us these animals, their body is set up correctly for maintaining that pregnancy. And we could spend all day, stuff we've worked on with estrus, on sperm transport and embryo survival. And so some of that is actually in the proceedings. But now, what else can we go into? Once they're bred, once that conception occurs and we have that embryo, now we're worried about maintaining that pregnancy. And one of the things we got into several years ago was actually starting to look at this, and kind of like Rick talked about on some of their fetal programming, wasn't really the area we were looking into. We were actually looking at some of the ways to actually develop heifers cheaper. And one of the things we really started seeing was differences in embryo survival. So when we started looking at embryo survival, there's lots of things that can impact it. One being genetic factors, heat stress, synchrony between the embryo and maternal environment, so between the embryo and the uterus, becomes very important if you're doing embryo transfer. There's effects of the sire, nutrition, and shipping stress. All of these things become critical management decisions that you may not think about when you've already bred that animal. Well, to understand how some of these things can really impact embryo survival, it's important to line out a little bit of what actually goes on. And so if we look, estrus is on day zero. Ovulation, as you've seen several people put up here, somewhere between 28 and 31 hours later. So on day one, first cell division, the next day, we start going through these early cellular divisions. The embryo migrates to the uterus between day 5 and 6. So before this time, it's up in the oviduct. Day 7 to 8, blastocyst. So anybody who's worked with embryo transfer, this is the stage we usually flush embryos, because that would be the blastocyst stage, because a couple of days later, that embryo hatches from the zona. And so we really try to flush these embryos before they hatch. But what's interesting is it's not down here until day 15 to 17 that maternal recognition of pregnancy occurs. So when we synchronize and we AI a cow, it's not until 2 weeks later that she even knows she's pregnant. And so one of the things I asked the question of, what's the easiest thing it is to lose? something you didn't even know you had. And so if we do something to this cow during this first 2 weeks, she doesn't even know she's pregnant. She can lose that pregnancy, cycle back in 21 days, just like you never even bred her. Now, what's interesting is if we go through maternal recognition of pregnancy, then if she loses it, that's when we start getting into the irregular cycles, the extended cycles, because she knew she had that pregnancy. The other interesting thing is starting about day 20 to 25 is when that embryo starts to attach to the uterus. So up until this point, so the first 3 to 4 weeks, that embryo is totally dependent upon the secretions from the uterus to survive. Part of my dissertation, we looked at embryonic loss. And what we noticed is after about day 42 through parturition, there was very little embryonic loss. Well, why is that? That embryo is definitively attached to the uterus, and it's basically pulling the nutrients it needs then. Before that time, it's surviving totally on secretions from the uterus. So if we change something in our management, or we stress that animal, that embryo can die basically by changes in those secretions. So one of the things I threw up there was shipping stress. I like to throw this one in just because a lot of people don't think about it. Studies have looked at this has mainly been done in heifers. Some of this work was done up at Fort Keogh, where they synchronized animals, bred them, and then they put them in a truck either day 1 to 4, 8 to 12, 29 to 33, or 45 to 60. Drove an hour down the road, turned around, drove back, unloaded them back in the same pen, and then looked at embryonic loss. And if you look, synchronized pregnancy rates were 74%, 62, 65. So if you compare these back to the early trucking, you can see that stress can impact embryo survival. What's interesting about this one, day 45 to 60, is they actually preg check the animals before loading them on the truck. Now, one of the varied things, and I get asked this question a lot when we move cattle to summer range, is when can I truck them, and am I always going to see these losses? We have a group on campus that we truck out to pasture. It's about 5 miles, so they're not on a truck very long. We don't see a lot of loss yet. We don't see a lot of loss on the cow side. It really goes back to how stressed these animals are. At the same time, I had one of the consultants in the state called me one time. I had been talking about shipping stress. And he said, well, is there any difference if you trail animals? And I said, well, when we've done things and looked at them, we've seen no effect when we trail them. And he said, well, how do you trail an animal? I thought that was a strange question. I said, we point them in the right direction and we walk with them. Is there, well, one of the herds I work with, his son and hired man can get him about 4 miles down the road in about 15 minutes. Is there, that's not trailing. He said, well, it's as fast as the four-wheeler will push him down the road. He was worried about stress. It does happen. I've also seen, you know, two or three people on four-wheelers and dirt bikes, the fourth lap around the pasture, the cows finally saw the open gate and ran into it. That's stressful handling. And so we really want to avoid any handling stress, whether it's shipping or anything else that can affect this. There's studies out there that showed even going through the chute can impact some of the handling. And so we want to be very mindful of how stressful we handle these animals. The other stress I really want to talk about is the one we've been working on that we kind of came across by accident, and it's more of a nutritional stress. We were actually looking at one of our range stations, a cheaper way to develop heifers was the original goal. I was working with one of our nutritionists, and some of the data that was out there said, well, we can stockpile range. If it's an open winter, we can go through, turn them out, and let them graze all winter. Well, what we did, we turned them out, and we noticed over that first week, they lost 3 pounds a day. So we wanted to go back and look at this and say, okay, what is this doing to conception rate? So we actually, 5 different herds, almost 500 heifers, they either spent all winter in the feedlot or they had 30 days or more grazing prior to synchronizing AI. If we look across every replicate, those with prior grazing experience had better average daily gains. But what's more interesting is about a 10% better conception rate. Because they knew what to do when they got out to grass, they did not see that weight loss. We put pedometers on a group of heifers one time to say, okay, what's going on? If we look, these animals went from being in the feedlot. Prior to being in the feedlot, they were taking about 2,000 steps a day, so they were about here. The first day out on grass, almost 18,000 steps. So I tell people that's about like sitting on the couch all winter and then go running a marathon the first day out of spring. It took them 5 days to calm down to the same point as the group that had been out grazing before. Well, do you think 5 days is enough to affect embryo development? We took about 132 heifers, 8 replicates here, all on the same growing plane of nutrition, synchronized AI. At AI, they were either restricted to 80% or less of maintenance or kept on their same growing plane of nutrition. We flushed embryos on day 6. What's interesting, no difference in embryo recovery rate. Stage was decreased in those that were restricted. Embryo quality was poorer. So embryo quality, you got to think of as backwards. A grade 1 embryo is better than a grade 2. Total cells were decreased, almost half the number of cells in the embryo. Percent alive was also decreased. And so, yes, 5 days of restriction can have an impact on embryo quality. Can you overcome this? We've taken about 300 heifers, moved them out to grass, and said, okay, well, if we feed them some, can we overcome this? We've done all the grass clippings. We made sure we weren't restricting the group that was out on pasture any. And yes, we did. When we supplement those animals that have spent all winter in the feedlot, we get better pregnancy rates. So consistency becomes extremely important. And so how do you determine what went wrong? Dr. Lauderdale mentioned Jim Wiltbanks earlier. A lot of this stuff can go back a long ways. The equation of reproduction, animals detected in estrus, inseminator efficiency, fertility level of the herd, fertility level of the semen. If we take all 4 of those and we multiply them across, we get the conception rates to a single service. If we do everything perfect, of course, we get 100%. I have students tell me it only takes us 70% to pass a class. You get 24% pregnant. And so when we start looking at what can go wrong, animals are not a good candidate for breeding. Protocol compliance, we've heard talked about, facilities, handling stress, nutritional stress. The biggest one is details. Most of the things with reproduction is paying attention to the details. And as been pointed out before, if we follow recommendations, it's usually not the drug, it's usually not the semen, unless things have been mishandled. And so with that, may have time for a couple of questions.